74 degrees in Detroit. I'm Dan Streeter on 760 WJR, Detroit Superstation for news and information.
But good morning, world, or Ohio gozaimasu, from our studios here in the Okura Hotel in central Tokyo. Welcome to day two of our Japanese sojourn.
Merci, monsieur. Good morning, world.
From the Salon d'Automobile à la Parc des Expositions. That's the Paris Auto Show. Well, good morning, world, and a very pleasant Monday to you from the center court here at the All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club in Wimbledon, England, just about 20 miles or so outside of London. Well, good morning, world, and a very pleasant Friday to you. It's the 4th of May. And it is the day before the Kentucky Derby, 1990. We are here on the backstretch of historic Churchill Downs, that twin-spired track with so much history.
Well, dobre utre, world. Good morning from our studios in the Rossiya Hotel here in the shadow of the Kremlin in downtown Moscow. I'm J.P. McCarthy, and always have been.
Here at the Tiger Stadium for the 1991 season opener. And I want you to know this. It is the best season opener in terms of the weather I have ever seen. It's a little cloudy, but there's lots of blue up there, and it's actually muggy. Happy St. Patrick's Day 1987, everybody. We have a very good group here already in the lobby of the WJR studios here on the 21st floor. Top of the morning to you. We are at the Pegasus celebrating St. Patrick's Day a couple of days early this year for all the obvious reasons. It's really Sunday. We have a good early group on hand, several real Irishmen and several who would be on this day when we're going to celebrate for the next couple of hours, the wearing of the green.
Well, good morning, world, and a very pleasant Monday to you. It's Groundhog's Day, February 2nd, 1987, and I can't believe it, but we are sitting here in Fremantle, Australia, on the west coast of Australia, some 12 miles from Perth, right by the beautiful blue Indian Ocean. As you must know by now, it's the site of the America's Cup races, which have taken a definite United States turn as of today. Some details on what just happened on the course a few hours ago as we make our way through the morning.
The 1994 Detroit Free Press WJR Christmas Sing is on.
Yay!
We're here in the New Center Park, right across the street from the Fisher Building, Grand Boulevard and 2nd. We've got a crowd of 5,000 very hearty souls, don't we?
Have you ever known an Irishman that couldn't make you cry? Have you ever known an Irishman without a twinkle in his eye? There is one such man I knew for years, with gifts and talents true. And the thing that did amaze me most was he gave it all to you. Each day he'd sit himself behind the microphone and tell you things you hadn't heard or things you hadn't known. He spoke a flattering speech, he did, and treated all as friend. He questioned and he queried the kings and common men. Have you ever known an Irishman that couldn't make you smile? Who was always there with his support, who'd walk that extra mile? There is one such man I knew for years, so young and full of zest, and in his life he'd climb each hill till he became the best. It's not so much what he became, but how and why he did attain a sense of fairness, a sense of right, the things that help us sleep at night. It's not to say he was perfect, no, for perfection there is none. But he knew the battles that he fought were battles to be won. He tilted windmills daily, but there was one day in the year, out came the pipes and fiddles on that day that was so dear. He'd go and throw a party where everyone was seen, and he'd welcome all his brothers for the wearing of the green. He loved the game of gentlemen, and he sailed on ocean's crest, other than his family dear, these things he loved the best. He savored life and filled his moments with really simple things. A stout, a song, a book. The joy that these things bring. I knew this man, this Irishman, for 110 years. There was an elegance about him, and sure, a touch of sin. He'd not approve of all this sentiment. He'd call it so much mush. I remember jokes he told me. They would make a sergeant blush. At times he'd express a gentleness, a true sincerity. And every time he spoke to all, it was with clarity. And what is it that's been left to us in this time of grief and sorrows? Where will he be as each day passes in all of our tomorrows? I suppose it's time for trust and faith with the passing of this man. Knowing he's at peace and this man's soul is in God's dear loving hand.
It's 6:30 on this Thursday morning in Detroit. Frank Beckman along with Mike Worf, who just brought you that very special tribute to J.P. McCarthy. And indeed, Michael, we have all known some kind of Irishman.
Yes, indeed we have. A difficult day. But Joe had a very tough exterior, too. And you had to get, you know, close to him to understand the sincerity and warmth and the kind of person he was.
We'll hear a lot of that sincerity and warmth this morning. We will hear J.P.'s voice often. This, after all, should be the J.P. McCarthy Show this morning more than any other morning, and it will be.
Well, I was looking in the mirror this morning after I'd finished shaving and wiping just the last bit of shaving cream off the end of my nose. I stared at myself, and I said,
"You have the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and the truth. Yet there's that upturned chin and the grin of impetuous youth. Oh, the sound of good, solid judgment whenever you talk. Yet there's the bold, brave spring of the tiger that quickens your walk. Grasping mine, and I take heart, I take heart, to see the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth.
Yet there's that slam, bang, tang, reminiscent of gin and vermouth. Oh, I believe in you. How I believe in you. I believe in you. I believe in you.
That's what I said to myself. It felt awfully good this morning. The late Bobby Darin.
I believe in you.
From a show called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Hi, J.P. McCarthy. Just calling very early this morning. He's on his way to the office. The chairman of the Chrysler Corporation. Day after his proudest moment, Lee Iacocca. Good morning.
Good morning, J.P. How are you?
I'm terrific, but and I want you to know how good you looked on everybody's television sets 2 days ago when you went down and surprised a lot of people and wrote them a check for $800 million.
It's the first fun day I've had in Washington in 4 years. I appreciate your calling me, J.P., and it's a nice feeling.
Congratulations again.
Yeah, thank you.
Always a pleasure to talk to one of our winners of the day in person. That was great fun.
Right. Thank you, J.P.
Lee Iacocca, the still-smiling chairman of Chrysler Corporation, and one of the most amazing American business stories of our history.
Every morning from 6 to 9, J.P. McCarthy proves once again that he's one of the truly great impressionists of our time. Here's J.P. doing his world-famous impression of Gary Cooper.
Let's see you wet your upper lip and say, "The world is full of dames. All you gotta do is whistle."
J.P.'s impression of Henry Fonda is a show business legend.
Here's looking at you, kid.
Here's J.P. as Peter Lorre.
Dames are simple. I never met one who didn't understand a slap in the face or a slug from a .45.
J.P. recreates Maria Ospenskaya in the role of the gypsy fortune teller.
It's nothing a little bourbon and soda couldn't fix.
Show business history is made every morning from 6:15 to 9 on WJR's Morning Music Hall, 760 on your dial. J.P., just one more time. Do bogey for us.
Here is looking at you, my little kid.
I bring you greetings from radio. That's my world. Couple of radio people who remember radio. I'm delighted to hear that. From the land of megahertz and kilohertz, from AM and FM, that ubiquitous medium that is always around us, like nitrogen and oxygen in the air, on the air, all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Radio, which literally offers something for everyone, music of all kinds, from rock to country to pop to MOR to AOR, music to get you high, music to get you low, music to put you to sleep by, music to get you in the mood by, and talk, 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 news, commercials, traffic, commercials, weather commercials, time commercials. The world of radio, the prime communications medium that literally every American listens to at some time every single day. At last count, there were 550 million, count them, 550 million radio sets in the United States, more than two radios for everybody, singing and talking to you 24 hours a day incessantly, and producing, just in case you're interested in commercial numbers, $3.5 billion in revenue per year the last time they checked, and going up. 99% of cars have radios in them. The average home is equipped with four or more radios, and we have instant communications worldwide. You see, we've got you from cradle to grave, coming and going, in elevators, in dentist's offices, and on tropical islands, we've got you.
Radio 76, WJR, J.P. McCarthy.
Joan, thank you very much. As you speak, we're sitting here alongside the practice putting green at the Magnolia course here at the Walt Disney World, and we, of course, are down here today and tomorrow for the Walt Disney World Oldsmobile Golf Classic, and I'm watching a father with an 18-month-old baby, and he's teaching the 18-month-old baby how to putt. And after watching Dad putt for the last hour, I'm not at all sure he should be the teacher.
You're going to find this surprising. Longevity. I mean, I've been doing this for a very long time. And I never thought I would do one thing for this long. I thought it would get boring, get stale, get old, and that I would too. But frankly, I enjoy doing what I do. And I hope to do it for a good deal longer. To be around for as long as I have in this business is remarkable. And there isn't any one thing that I feel the most warm about. I think it's the whole thing. Probably not much different than what is important to most other people. Good family, close family, good friends, close friends. Quality time with the people I love. That's what really counts. And enjoying coming to work every morning. That's a part of my life, too. The moment I stop enjoying it, looking forward to it, being surprised by it, I'll probably stop doing it.
More very special moments with J.P. McCarthy coming up after the 7 o'clock news with Dan Streeter here on WJR Detroit.
You're listening to the great voice of the Great Lakes, Superstation 760, WJR, Detroit. The big chair in Studio D is empty this morning. A microphone hangs over the desk, but its switch is not on. The star who worked in that place isn't here this morning. He's got more important things to do. He was needed at a place with a much bigger signal than the one we have here at WJR. I'm Dan Streeter in the WJR News Center. WJR morning host J.P. McCarthy was 62 years old when he died yesterday afternoon at Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. J.P. McCarthy's condition, his medical condition, deteriorated so rapidly, so fast, that his doctors were stunned. With more on this part of our story this morning, here's WJR's Donna Barbera.
Many of his listeners probably didn't notice it, but about 2 months ago, J.P. McCarthy started feeling tired. Some of us at the station noticed J.P. was missing that summer glow from his face, and he was clearing his throat more often. He planned a big vacation on the 4th of July holiday. When he was too tired to go sailing, he called his doctor, Melvin Lester.
It was difficult the day that Joe called me, told me what the problem was that had been diagnosed, and came over to see me and asked me to quarterback, as he said, the care that he was going to get. It was difficult all the time, and of course it became more difficult as things began to deteriorate and never could be reversed.
The blood test showed a lack of red cells and white cells. This condition is treatable first with blood transfusions and then later by a bone marrow transplant. When news of his condition spread, thousands lined up at local hospitals, rolled up their sleeves, and tried to help J.P. beat his illness. J.P. did not have a brother or sister, and no one in his family was a match. But to no avail, a match was never found. Dr. Lester and J.P. were optimistic, though, at first.
In the beginning, yes. Because we have seen and we know that some patients with myelodysplastic syndrome will go into a remission which may last 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years and nothing happens. And so obviously we wanted to be optimistic and hope that that's what would happen with JP's problem, and that in the interim, in that time, we could determine, the oncologist could determine what was the best approach to take to try to quell this problem. But unfortunately, it never remitted. It kept going downhill. Each day was worse than the last.
Dr. Lester and the specialists at Sloan Kettering Medical Center in New York City say they had never seen this progress so fast. J.P. died of pneumonia in his sleep, one of the complications of the red cell leukemia that finally took over. More than 500 potential donors were in line last evening at Beaumont Hospital in Troy. When they learned of J.P.'s death, they all stayed in line and they took their blood test.
J.P.'s roots here in Detroit reach back to the 1940s and to the East Side. His oldest friends and colleagues are remembering J.P. this morning along with us and reminiscing. Here's WJR News Director Dick Havener.
Dan J.P. came to us at the age of 10 from New York. That's where he was born. The McCarthy family settled on the East Side and went to the Catholic schools that dotted the neighborhood around City Airport. First, the Annunciation School, then Grotto School. That's where Brother George Sinar of the Christian Brothers first met the lad. Brother George, now 84, used to play handball with little Joe McCarthy. The brothers who ran the school helped develop his ability to deal with people.
I always supported J.P. First of all, I used to encourage him, you know, in his work. I enjoyed chatting with him from time to time and recognizing that he had an influence beyond just being a talk show host, that he was able to make people comfortable. And, you know, for us who teach people, we like to see our students achieve that kind of rapport with people.
Later, Brother George was a teacher and principal at J.P.'s high school, De La Salle Collegiate. Builders of boys, makers of men. And Brother George spotted J.P.'s speaking ability at an early age.
First of all, the brothers who taught him, Brother John and Brother Arata, found him to be a very spontaneous speaker. And he was trained in public speaking. And I think he appreciated the fact that both of these fellows were very high-class teachers, and he revered them. He was he actually was a very good debater and a public speaker. He learned how to speak extemporaneously. Brother Arata, in particular, used to teach him how to speak, you know, off the cuff. So I think he established his style even on that level. You know, he was about in the junior class at the time. He was about 16 years old, I think.
J.P. was their star student. Brother George Sinar, who has been heard many times by you, J.P.'s listeners, at the De La Salle home in New Jersey. The Christian brothers and their cousins, the Jesuits, are buzzing this morning about the loss of their special friend. Brother George says he will be at the funeral, something he never thought he would live to see.
WJR News Time, 717, 74 degrees in Detroit. I'm Dan Streeter on 760 WJR Detroit Superstation for news and information.
Mike Worf, unfortunately, it's sometimes in our sadness that we realize the greatness in whose company we've been, and that's certainly the case with JP on a morning like this, mm-hmm. Less than 24 hours after his passing.
Indeed,
you were with JP when he really started as a radio star in this town 3 decades ago.
Exactly, I was here in 1964. Joe came on about a month later, after his sojourn in San Francisco. And people forget that he was, at one time, when he first came back, both the morning and the afternoon guy. But he decided he wanted to do the focus. And this is where he started to perfect the art of conversation. That's what Joe was. I mean, we talk about interviews and his eloquence and so on and so forth. But he was a conversationalist. And he made the listener the third party. You know, he would talk to the guest, but the listener felt as if there were only three listening.
We've been fortunate in this town to have many talented people. One of those worked with JP on his show. He was JP's sportscaster, mm-hmm. for a time.
In those early years, right.
Legendary sportscaster himself at Channel 7 and at ABC, and a very close friend of Joseph Priestley McCarthy's. It's Dave Dials, who's down in Ohio. David, good morning. I know you share the same sorts of thoughts all of us do, a sense of great loss, and you and he developed quite a relationship, and you know what a sportsman he was and what a great fan he was.
Well, you didn't dare make a mistake on the morning sports, because he was on top of things as much as anybody else. He had a great love for sports, and you know, I think when you consider the immensity of his talent and the scope of it, he really was so remarkable that I don't think we will see the likes of him again. I agree with Mike. He absolutely was the best interviewer that in my time that I have ever known in the business. And I really think if you try to look at it and wonder why he was so good, I think it's very clear. First of all, he was exceedingly bright. He was not just some disc jockey or some personality. He really was a very bright guy and very well read, and so he was prepared. And secondly, and maybe this is the most important factor, he was a very attentive listener. Absolutely nothing got by him. I hear people and watch people do interviews today, and you can just tell that they have prepared their questions. And if they were interviewing Ronald Reagan, and suddenly in the midst of this 7 or 8 question interview, Reagan said, "You know, I almost dropped the atomic bomb on Canada." Well, the interviewer would just ignore that because I have to get on to my next question. The slightest little thing, JP would pick up on it. And then you add to that how generous he was with his time. He never forgot, I don't know whether he was Shakespearean as a student, but he never forgot the words of Shakespeare, that the play is the thing. As big a star as he was, and he knew that he was, there's no question about that, he was so generous with his time and touched many, many lives. Maybe the best thing about him is that he was not destructive with the immense power that he had. He had a very good sense of how many people he reached, how many lives he touched, how far his influence was felt, not only was in sports, and he was so conversant. He could talk about somebody, about the changes in the Catholic Church. He could talk about Jimmy Swaggart. He could talk about sports. He could talk about politics. Very much at home in any field, and there aren't too many people that you can say that about. Maybe the test of JP is like the test of a Ted Williams. He wasn't one of those guys who came out with one record and got on the Ed Sullivan Show and went to the top of the charts and disappeared. You know, he made it over the long haul. And isn't that really the mark of a real champion? Did he do it over a protracted period of time? And the answer on JP, of course, is yes.
For many, many years. It wasn't that long ago that that you and JP both mourned the passing of Howard Cosell, and there was a very poignant moment during that conversation between Dave and JP.
Dave Dials probably does the best eulogies of anyone on the face of the earth. I've said that before. I still remember his eulogy for the late Don Watrick. And when I go, if Dave is still around, it would be my fondest wish that he does mine.
Oh, what am I to say to that?
It's been a very difficult time for you, David,
with
Mickey Mantle's passing, with JP's passing, Howard Cosell's passing, a lot of friends leaving you.
Yeah, it really has. JP has, pardon me, I'm having a little difficult time. JP over the years has said that to me. I remember when I came up to speak at his roast that the Capuchins did for him, and we roasted him pretty good that night, and he got up and said, "Well, I know that if you outlive me, I'll get even because you have to do my eulogy." And you know, he was a class act. It's just very difficult. You don't want to second guess God. You don't want to, you know. But all of us, it's a very human part of our frailty to say, "Why me, God?" But today we're saying, "Why JP?" Because I know in the book of Ecclesiastes, there's a time for everything, a time to live and a time to die. But this morning you want to say, God, really, are you sure you did the right thing? Because it really wasn't JP's time, but our calendar doesn't have anything to do with God's calendar. So we just have to accept it and go on and try to be stronger because of it and use JP's life as a positive, and also to understand, to look at the frailty of ourselves and our own mortality, and make sure that our house is in order.
JP McCarthy, WJR.
U of D Engineering School has a co-op program, so you're working all the time. You're going to school, so I was, you know, I knew what it was like to be in a detailer and a draftsman. And I decided on my way up to Alaska on a troop ship that I was going to be a broadcaster in radio or television. Don't ask me why. I don't know why. That's what I decided I wanted to do before I'd ever even seen a microphone.
That's amazing.
Well, it's true.
It really is. Because
And I'd made up my mind and just happened to work out that way. But I think when I got my first job, my first real job where they've actually paid me money. This was outside of Armed Forces Radio Service. We worked worked at Land Air Force Base, AFRS, Alaska, and also in town, one of the two commercial stations there, KFAR. And they paid us. And that was fun. Then I thought, this is it. I'm going to be very good at this, and I'd never thought about being a star, really, but I thought I'd do very well. Don't ask me why.
Do you have trouble with that word, star?
Yeah.
Celebrity?
Nah, you know, everybody's a celebrity.
Yeah.
November 15 in Chicago. The Radio Hall of Fame will enshrine five names you know. Leonard Goldemson, J.P. McCarthy, Casey Kasem and Don Ameche, and collectively the Grand Ole Opry. Paul Jr. and I will co-host the induction ceremony November 15.
And now in the category of local or regional personality, here to present this year's award is WGN's Wally Phillips.
One score and 7 years ago, our fathers, who owned a piece of WJR in Detroit, scoured the country to find a young, brilliant, educated, intelligent, innovative, imaginative, erudite, sophisticated, mature, articulate, devoted, sincere, perspicacious, astute, extremely good-looking talent for their morning drive time. Unfortunately, I was signed with WGN at the time. So I wasn't available. So they thought, well, let's try another tact. What if we were to get something really innovative, the most ignorant, insulting, smarmy, scuzzy, scurrilous, revolting, repulsive, biased, bigoted, angry, tasteless, obnoxious, and obscene broadcaster in America? But at that time, Howard was 8 years old. and was still under supervision for a misguided lewd conduct report at a confessional at St. Patrick's Cathedral. So they picked J.P. McCarthy, a man who had been turned down twice by the Barbara Walters School of Speech. Nonetheless, he's been waking up Detroit on WJR radio for over 27 years, has been rated number one for each of these years. He has a knack for getting important people to talk to him when they refuse interviews everywhere else. He sends his rejects to Larry King. The only person who ever declined an interview with J.P., I don't know where he is today, but I'm sure Mr. Hoffa learned to regret. He's a self-made man, which we'll show you in a minute what unskilled labor can do. But the National Association of Broadcasters has nominated J.P. as Major Market Personality of the Year for the Marconi Awards, 4 years of the award's existence. And Billboard magazine has given J.P. its National Radio Personality of the Year award 4 times. What's this guy all about, you say? Let's take a listen.
WJR, the legendary great voice of the Great Lakes, and for over 3 decades, the most familiar voice on WJR. Has been this.
Well, good morning, world, and a very pleasant Wednesday to you here at 19 minutes after 6. It's raining like the old proverbial cats and dogs.
When it comes to morning radio in Michigan, the word tradition is spelled with 6 letters. J.P. on J.R. in the A.M.
WJR is a Detroit tradition, and J.P. McCarthy is the voice of Detroit.
He can talk to very important or controversial people and ask them very direct and pointed questions without being rude about it.
I can't tell you how many mornings I've had breakfast with J.P. McCarthy.
What's the problem with Barry Sanders? It doesn't add up to $150 million, Governor, so where's the rest of the money coming from? Your man has got to get tougher if he's going to close the gap, doesn't he? It would be nice to see the gloves off, though, one more time, don't you think?
From President...
J.P., man. Just talking to you again. I'm glad to hear your voice.
Well, it's nice to hear you.
Performers,
Charlton Heston. Nice
lovely to,
see you to
be borrowing your audience again.
To people all over Michigan.
You. Yes, what do you think?
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
I'm calling in from Lansing.
Everyone talks to JP.
The other end of my line this morning, the maybe the greatest golfer who's ever lived. Name is Jack Nicklaus.
JP, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Day after his proudest moment, Lee Iacocca. Good morning.
Good morning, JP. How are you?
Right stuff is all about. Good morning, General Yeager.
Morning, J.P.
John DeLorean, welcome back.
J.P., it's a pleasure to see you again.
Yeah, but it's Raquel Welch doing it, so that counts.
You better believe it. It's my
President Carter. Have you ever buried the hatchet with the senator?
We've never had any personal animosity.
No one understands Detroit better. Nowhere else will you find a closer relationship between a city and its favorite radio personality.
J.P. knows everybody who's anybody in Detroit.
He's comfortable to get up with.
I like the way J.P. does it.
While his legions of loyal listeners are justifiably proud, to them and to everyone in Michigan, J.P. McCarthy has been a Hall of Famer for a long, long time.
I'm J.P. McCarthy. We'll get this turkey on the road in a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Radio Hall of Fame is proud, and I'm proud to be a participant in an opportunity to induct Mr. J.P. McCarthy.
Thank you, Wally. Gosh, I've missed you, Wally. Those warm and wonderful, intimate introductions and moments we used to have took me weeks to get over them after we'd talk. I do feel a little bit like Admiral Stockdale, though. Who am I? What am I doing here? But I love it. Part of the reason I love it is because I grew up around the corner from the old WXYZ studios in Detroit. Remember, Mr. Goldenson, where they used to produce The Lone Ranger? And as a boy, I would watch these actors come in and out of the studio. Brace Beamer, the man who played Tonto, John Todd, the great Fred Foy, and they always looked like they were having so much fun. I wanted to grow up to be them. Well, I miss that, but this is as close as I'm ever going to get, and I am most grateful tonight. It is humbling to be in such august company tonight. Think of it. Leonard Goldenson, for whom I used to work, Paul Harvey, with whom I share my morning time, Casey Kasem, another Detroiter, that great American institution, the Grand Ole Opry. I am awed. It is a major, major honor. There are lots of people I'd like to thank here. too many, of course, to mention, but I'll try. FCC Commissioner Jim Quello, who took a chance on me a long time ago. Thank you, Commissioner, very much. To the Cap Cities ABC guys and Dan Burke, who brought me to Detroit from San Francisco. I didn't think it was such a great favor at the time. Thank you, Dan. My good friend and mentor, Bill James, and to all of my friends, many of which are here tonight. My lovely wife, Judy, is here. I've got 5 of 6 kids here and 60 or 70 great Detroiters. I have been in radio all of my adult life, which means that I have never, ever had a real job. Because it's been just wonderful fun, and I want to thank all of you for that. From the bottom of my heart, this Detroit boy will cherish this night forever. Thank you. Thanks, Wally.
Since I was accorded this signal honor of addressing you today, I've really been trying to think of what I might say that might be inspirational, uplifting, maybe even profitable to you. And to be honest, it isn't easy to come up with a highly optimistic homily of promise these days because, in case you haven't heard, and as Tarzan used to say so often to Jane, it's a jungle out there. But smart cats like you have always prospered and survived in the jungle. It's the fat cats who frequently don't do so well, so good hunting to you.
I think in the early days, sure, because I grew up in this town listening to people as a kid, like Robin Seymour and Jack the Bellboy, Ed McKenzie, and Don McLeod, and the guy I eventually replaced here, Marty McNeely. And I suppose in those early days, yeah, for sure, you listened and that influenced your style, but then you forgot that very quickly.
One of the best known, certainly one of the most visible men here in Moscow, as well as around the world, is the chief anchorman for ABC television, Peter Jennings, who must feel very sleepy this week because when he's feeding his ABC evening newscasts back to the United States, of course, it's the middle of the night. Good of you to stop by in our rather neat, if small, studio and join us today. What are your impressions so far?
I was going to tell you a couple stories, actually. First, about this hotel to which you refer as you look around the room. You know, they say that the Tsar has commissioned the largest bell in the world, which is inside the Kremlin, and it never rang. It broke before it was rung. They also built the largest cannon in the world, and it never worked. And they built the largest hotel in the world, and it doesn't work. 6,000 people a night sleep here. You also mentioned visible, which made me laugh, because it's very ironic for me to walk around the streets of Moscow and have Soviet citizens say hi. I always have to do a double take because I've been doing this series of programs called Capital to Capital, one of these space bridges between the Congress and the Supreme Soviet.
So they do know you?
They do know us here. In fact, at a luncheon for the Gorbachevs at the State Department some months ago, Mrs. Gorbachev, who's a very beautiful woman, shook my hand and said, I see you on television. I thought, oh, lady, anything.
You see, you can't go anywhere. My special guest in focus today was the 39th President of the United States, the first president from the South since before the Civil War, and the man who more than any other president in American history, I believe, addressed himself and his administration to the always volatile, critical, and thorny issues generated by the Middle East for time immemorial, the Holy Land, a land of turmoil. And a land today that is still a cause for great concern, a tinderbox, if you will. It has been for as long as any of us can remember.
President Carter, I think the Middle East was his peril and his glory, the shining hours of the Camp David Accord to the nightmare of Iran. Mr. President, you look so well. Thank you for coming.
I get along fine. I always feel good when I come to Detroit.
The last time that you were here via phone, we had the First Lady of the State with us. She just happened to be on the same program that day, Paula Blanchard, and we reminisced about the campaign in 1980 and about the Democratic Convention. And you did say that you were going to kick Senator Kennedy's ass. Those were your words, in fact, and you did. Have you ever buried the hatchet with the senator?
We've never had any personal animosity or unpleasantness between us. As a matter of fact, I saw him last month in Washington, and we had a very pleasant exchange of a handshake and a few words about our families. But we have been political opponents.
Aboard Air Force One with President Bush, Mr. President, the three latest polls I saw this morning, remember this is Sunday, show the gaps closing. Obviously that cheers you. Why? Why is it closing, do you think?
Because we're getting our message out. And because people are getting serious now about who they want to be president of this country, they're asking themselves, who do we trust to be in that Oval Office? They recognize that a lot of what they've been told night after night in the national media has not been accurate. And I think they also understand that though we have economic problems, we're in something global. And they recognize America is doing better than most of the international economies. So it's a combination of things.
Sir, what about what about the Ross Perot factor? He's also improving in the numbers dramatically, faster than you are.
Time will tell on that. I cannot read it, and I don't spend any time trying to. All I try to do is get my message out. I honestly can't help you on what it means.
Mr. President, a year and a half ago, immediately following the Persian Gulf War and for a couple of months thereafter, you could have been reelected by acclamation. There would have been no need for a referendum. What happened? I know you've thought about that.
The economy and the Democratic leadership. The Democratic leadership in Congress decided the only way we can possibly win is to stop any progress for this economy. And the bills that I put in to try to stimulate investment and savings were blocked on pure partisan grounds. And then, of course, some of the friends in the media wanted to see a horse race. They feel much more comfortable personally with Clinton, and they've gone after me with a vengeance. But it's changing now because the American people are fair. And they'll say, listen, this president might make a mistake. If he does, he admits it. And besides that, he has our trust and confidence.
There is only one way to introduce my next guest. It's a very simple introduction, and it is my pleasure to be able to utter it. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. Good afternoon, Mr. President. How are you?
I'm great. It's nice to talk to you again.
Mr. President, one of the thrusts of your campaign was jobs. There would be more jobs. Jobs would be created. If the business climate isn't good, if there isn't an opportunity for businesses to do well, to be successful, there will be fewer jobs. I mean, that's just simple economics, isn't it?
That's right. But simple economics dictate that the President of the United States stop telling everybody what they want to hear and start telling the truth. That's what simple economics dictate. I mean, in 1981... we cut taxes and increased spending and nearly bankrupted this country over the next 12 years, and we've been paying for it ever since, so that we had very high long-term interest rates, and credit was expensive, and job generation was weak. That's a problem, by the way, for wealthy countries throughout the world. Even Japan's having trouble creating jobs now. But look what's happened since I announced my plan and it started to pass its way through Congress just in the last 4 or 5 months. First, we've had 755,000 new jobs in this economy, over 90% of them in the private sector in the first 4 months of this administration. In the previous 4 years, we only had 1 million jobs. Second, in construction, part of the economy very affected by interest rates. In the first 4 months, we had 130,000 new jobs. That's the biggest increase in 9 years. Has that affected every state and every community yet? No, but it shows that we are really moving in the right direction. If we can get everybody in this country to refinance their home loans, their business loans, to take available credit because interest rates are lower, that will put tens of billions of dollars back into this economy to create jobs.
What inflation rate, sir? I don't mean to interrupt you, but we're short on time. What inflation rate would you be happy with 1 year from now?
the lowest possible one. But if we got unemployment down to a very low level and every American had a job, it might be a tad higher than it is now. But we have no right now. We think we're in good shape on inflation. What we need in America are more jobs and higher incomes, and that's what we're working on. So this is a job-creating strategy we're following, and I believe it will work.
Ditto, Mr. J.P. McCarthy.
J.P. McCarthy,
Harvey, news and comment, brought to you by Verilux. Now, Paul Harvey News.
Good morning, Americans. For 30 years, Detroit has gone to work smiling, listening to J.P. McCarthy on WJR. Detroit is mourning this morning. It was a blood disorder which ended J.P. McCarthy's life in its 62nd year. Paul Harvey, good day.
WJR. Live from the Pegasus and the Fisher, the third annual St. Patrick's Day party with
J.P. McCarthy.
Top of the morning to you. Happy St. Patrick's Day 1988 from Opegasus, the only Greek-Irish bar in America today, here in the Fisher Building on the first floor of the emerald-towered Fisher Building, where it smells wonderfully like orange juice and garlic. It's terrific. We have a few of the faithful gathered here this morning for our annual St. Patrick's Day bash, and we hope that you'll join along with us and have some fun. That's really the idea. Anybody who takes this day seriously just misses the whole point. Several of your favorite Irishmen have stopped by, and we'll be chatting with them. Matter of fact, one of the best-known Irishmen and one of our neighbors from across the street, Roger B. O. Smith from General Motors, just walked in. Top of the morning to you, Roger. Good to see you. Why don't we get Blackthorn warmed up to get us in the proper spirit of the day with the orange and the green. Boys?
forgive me. It's a good thing that you can't hear ogles, or is it ogling? I've never known which on the radio, because we have a studio full of bright, strong young men who are here today to see the annual preview of what the swimsuits will be like in the summer of 1989. It's our fourth annual swimsuit show. We unabashedly stole the idea from Sports Illustrated, but so what? So did everyone else. And so far as we know, we're the only ones who do it on the radio. With me again, our expert fashion commentator, fully clothed, I might add, in winter garb, Judy Schaefer. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to be here again for our fourth annual. This is always a lot of fun. When I explain to people that we're doing a fashion show on the radio, it raises a few eyebrows.
They look at you funny, don't they?
They do.
However, a more appropriate time could not have been chosen. Here, 40 days till launch, the dead of winter, very cold day in Detroit, very blustery, typically gray and slippery outside. What a breath of spring. Paul Carey and I are here in the WJR studio right at the corner of Woodward and Congress. The parade is underway, and here comes one of the first of many, many high school presentations. Candy Cane Ladies for the Hazel Park High School Viking Marching Band from Hazel Park, of course, led by band director Paul Klein. 140 musicians, 50 auxiliary members, one of the biggest of band groups here, 190 strong, looking very spiffy in their maroon, gray, and white uniforms with the HP on the chest.
And this is their first appearance on Woodward Avenue in this
Turkey Day Parade.
Well, the president of Churchill Downs, Tom Meeker's on the other end of my line right now, busier than almost anybody else in the country over the next 20 or 36 hours, let's say. How are you, Dean? Are your feet touching the ground, Tom?
Oh, yeah. It's a long day ahead of us today, but everything's going well. We need a little weather coming in. I understand you've got showers up there.
Yeah, it's a little damp this morning, but we understand your forecast calls for your rain to stop, and you should be drying up between now and post time. We all hope so.
Yeah, I think hopefully that's going to happen. It's a little damp right now, but we're okay.
Will you have a fast track, let's say, if the rain stops right now and starts drying up?
Yeah, in fact, we may very well have a fast track today. Our track takes water very easily.
Oh, it's a lot of fun to go to a ball game when the Fighting Tigers play. No clouds in the sky, the sun is up high, and it looks like a beautiful day. I like to hear the crowd stand up and cheer when a tiger hits that ball. Here they come with another home run. Well, it just went over the wall. I get a thrill when we beat those damn Yankees. I'm the first to shout, hooray, skies. So it's a lot of fun to go to a ball game when the Fighting Tigers play. Get a thrill when we beat those damn Yankees. I'm the first to shout, hooray! Oh, it's a lot of fun to go to a ball game when the Fighting Tigers play.
I suppose is what bothers most Americans of my era today who have kids, that maybe the future for our kids and our kids' kids potentially won't be as bright as it was for us, though I refuse to believe that. I hope I'm wrong. The great American dream is a reality for us. We had the chance to do it. All it took was a lot of work, being in the right place at the right time, and then pursuing whatever goals you had. I'm not quite certain that it's going to be that way for our kids and our kids' kids, and that bothers me. Things have changed dramatically, haven't they, in the last 30, 35 years? And I'm not sure for the better either. I don't think we are nearly as moral a country as we were. Surely there's more crime than there ever has been. I guess I've adapted, but that doesn't mean that that I embrace it. It's difficult for me to imagine some of the... It would have been impossible for me 30 years ago to imagine what's going on today, what you could buy at the store, what you could buy downtown, down the street. But it's here, and it's part of our society. I hope it isn't the crumbling of America as we know it. Well, I'm not ready to jump off the bridge yet.
Even with this enormous success, there have been moments of frustration and disappointment, but in asking the question, J.P. is well aware of his overall good fortune.
Well, frustrations and disappointments are just part of life. Let me be that philosophical with you. It happens to everyone, I think. Probably my biggest disappointment was not getting the Good Morning America show on ABC 5 or 6 years ago when it opened up, and I was told that I was a genuine candidate, went to New York a couple of times, and we discussed it and so forth, and then I was told that I would have an opportunity to do it twice live, host it on the air.
A live audition.
A live audition. They were doing that then, for a few guys. And then never got the opportunity to do that. That was disappointing. Wasn't the end of the world, because that would have changed my life considerably. But I'd be lying to you if I said that that I didn't want that job. I did. And I was disappointed that I never got the opportunity at least to get there and do a couple on the air. It would have been fun.
More of The J.P. McCarthy Show after the 9 o'clock news with Dan Streeter coming up next here on WJR Detroit.
You're listening to the great voice of the Great Lakes, Superstation 760, WJR, Detroit.
Free Press columnist Bob Talbert is on the other end of our line this morning. He was a very frequent visitor with J.P. on these airwaves, and we never had time to say goodbye.
Oh, Frank, it's awful. I mean, excuse me if I sound cry, because I am. I haven't stopped crying. The most important man I've ever known in Detroit is gone. The most single most important man, beyond politicians, beyond anything else, Frank. His reach, his importance, his opinion, his feelings, his everything was so much part of our lives. And you don't realize it until all of a sudden you realize he's not going to be there. And I wanted to talk to you, tell you guys how much I appreciate what you've done today. I mean, it's given us J.P. one more time, and where he's taken us, and the things he's done for us, and we've seen through him, the way we've lived through all around the world. And it's just, there's never been anybody bigger in the media, and I don't think anybody bigger, period, in this community. And thank you for giving us J.P. one more time.
Well, again, we thank Mike Shields and Russ White for that as we sit here and really mourn our loss. And I mean that not necessarily as a station and those of us who are friends with J.P., but as an entire community. We at the station were hit not that long ago with the death of another one of our friends and colleagues in Fat Bob Taylor. And to have this with J.P. right on its heels.
This has been an incredibly sad summer.
Ladies and gentlemen, won't you please welcome at long last Fat Bob, the singing plumber from Ann Arbor.
Now, who are you calling a fat plumber for? I don't know what I'm doing in here. I was just sent up here to fix a leaky faucet in the men's room.
You see how shy and retiring he is? This is the way he comes off on the phone in the morning, too. That's a lovely wrench.
Isn't that a beauty?
What's your real name, pal? What do you
really
do?
My real name is Roger Stanton.
Something like this might happen. I really don't know him,
this
folks.
This morning, that he made about me on the air. Roger, wherever you are.
Easy, careful, you're on the radio.
You can say anything about my mother you like. Because, fella, you ought to hear what she says about you. It's too much.
Have you got all this hate out of yourself? Have you rid yourself of these frustrations?
Oh, no, I've got some choice things to say to you, too, but after the show.
What's your real name? Are you really a plumber?
Yes, I'm really a plumber. I'm really Bob Taylor, and I'm really a plumber for the...
Robert Taylor.
Robert Taylor. Let's hear it for Robert Taylor.
You see how he takes over, right? He was just a voice on the telephone. Suddenly he's a star. Right? He's got his own show. Well, nice of you to invite me up. I really appreciate
I've enjoyed, it. I've enjoyed holding you up these last month and a half. And
You're a spiteful person.
So. You're right. Oh, yes. Definitely.
How's the plumbing racket?
Oh, it's very good. It's very good this week. By the way, I've got a little something for you, JP.
Yeah, I know you want to plug the place you work.
No, I...
You always
the
do.
Boys on the job sent this up to you, JP.
My...
Your very own wrench.
Gosh, I don't know what to say,
and your
guys.
Very own hard hat.
I've got it now.
Let's hear it for JP, the foreman.
Yes, sir. Just,
that's what it's for.
That's what I've always wanted. Right?
And when you
protect
play polo out there, you call it golf, but...
Listen, Bob, it's certainly been fun talking to you, but you really do take over.
Tune in tomorrow, folks. We're going to have an electrician on the job.
Listen, while you're here, could you fix... There is a problem in the men's room.
If you're not nice to me, there's seven guys downstairs with wrenches sitting in a truck, and they're going to come up and remove the executive men's washroom.
Phone McCarthy in Studio A, sitting at the microphone with a box of crayons and a big grin on his face.
And a Merry Christmas to you, JP. A very Merry Christmas.
Hey, you're just the guy I wanted to talk to. Look at this, Santa, the brand new, hot off the press JP McCarthy coloring book. You think you could push a few of these this year? Take a peek. See? They're all pictures of me that the kids can color. Me behind the mic. Me winning the gold medal for downhill skiing at the Winter Olympics. Me dancing the hustle at a famous Detroit discotheque. And there's one of me shooting the rapids on the Colorado River. Me skydiving from 50,000 feet. And here's a picture of Jack Lescooley. How the heck did he get in here? Hey, what do you think, Santa? How about, let's say 20,000 copies to start with?
Don't call me. I'll call you.
You're still sore because I didn't have you on the Focus program, aren't you? Listen, Santa pal, baby, sweetheart, you deliver a few of these coloring books, and I'll try and fit you into the show sometime, after the theme music starts playing, okay? Get you for a couple of minutes.
You mean the last 30 seconds of airtime, don't you? There's a word that I'm not allowed to use that would answer you.
Fellas, let's remember who we are.
From Studio D, this is J.P. McCarthy's Focus. WJR presents an active view of life and living in the Great Lakes area. A lively look at people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus by J.P. McCarthy.
Won't you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, we have a big crowd here, the Vice President of the United States, Hubert Humphrey. Mr. Vice President, my last name is McCarthy.
Yes, sir, I understand that.
And with your permission for the remainder of this broadcast, I'd like to change it to Smith.
Not at all. It's a good name and a good man.
You've been traveling from one end of the country to the other, doing some very vigorous campaigning in recent weeks as the convention draws closer. You've been talking to an awful lot of people. You spent 15 minutes out front here shaking hands with people. They ask you questions. I know they do.
Yes, they
do. What are they most concerned about? The people that you talk to, people on the street, the little people?
Well, I think they're concerned about the safety of their neighborhood, whether it's going to... I don't mean just the physical safety. I mean the streets, the environment of their neighborhood. I was out here, for example, dedicating a plant on pollution control and at St. Clair Shores, and... they're worried about adequate living space, playground space, education. As a matter of fact, two of the people that I met on the way coming here were talking to me about the need for additional aid to education. Not just the money aids, but the funds that make possible specialized education for handicapped children, for the mentally retarded, and for the those that have learning problems. I think that that you find an awful lot of our people... wanting to really upgrade the what upgrade the quality of life.
Are they more interested in what we would call domestic issues than they are about what's going on abroad, the Vietnam War, et cetera?
I think that here in the Midwest that you get more citizen interest in the domestic matters, about the cost of living, about housing. If you're going into a poorer neighborhood, the people are terribly concerned about jobs, about education, cleaning up the slum areas. If you're out in a suburban area, they're primarily concerned about the education of their children, the neighborhood development, prevent the suburbs from becoming unplanned, sprawling communities. It's a mixture. Obviously, behind all of this concern is a worry over the war.
What do they ask you about the war, Mr. Vice President?
Well, mostly reporters ask me about the war. That's a funny thing, you know. It really is. I want to talk to you about it. Seldom do the people ask me about it. I mean, the voting population, that's not a sign to me.
Mm-hmm.
I get a tremendous number of questions from the media about the war. But when I go into a meeting and they open up for questions, you know, I have sort of a question and answer. Out of 15 questions, maybe one will be on the war. The rest of it will be about riots, about some legislation that's in Congress, about some local issue. Frequently will be about the problem of hunger that people are concerned mm-hmm. in a country that has so much food as we have, why any child should not have an adequate diet. They'll ask, if you meet, in, as I said before, when you go into a low-income area, they're really then concerned about jobs.
Well, we're going to break away from politics for just a moment. We'll talk about the debate, though, with Spencer Abraham coming up shortly and others. But right now, we're going to remember a bit of great history, because it was 45 years ago today, on October 14th, 1947, the United States Air Force Captain Charles E. Chuck Yeager became the first person to fly faster than the speed of sound as he tested the X-1 rocket, wasn't it the X-1? Rocket-powered research plane over Muroc, California, over the desert, and broke the sound barrier, something they said could never be done. We have found General Chuck Yeager at his home in California. He's on the other end of my line right now. We wanted to wish you a very happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very much, J.P. It's nice to talk to you again, man. We've had a lot of fun on the radio, haven't we?
Well, and on television, too.
I think
I've interviewed you about 50 times, General.
Yeah.
Well, what do you remember about that day? We've all seen it depicted in The Right Stuff. We've read about it in your own book. What do you remember about it today, 45 years later?
Well, I suppose you just look back on it and say we were lucky, I suppose. And we had a great feeling of accomplishment, and that's... Really, that's about it. And, J.P., one of the things I think a lot of people didn't realize was, you know, we were working on about 10 different test programs, and the X-1 was just one of many. And as I look back on it, it was just a lot of hard work.
Yeah, but you didn't see any mystique about going through the sound barrier,
did you? Yeah, there was a lot of doubts that we'd ever be able to get through Mach 1. But, you know, and we really didn't know we were going to break the sound barrier on that particular day. In fact, we had no idea that we could. But, you know, duty entered into it. And looking back on it, I think we were pretty relieved that nothing flew apart on us. So.
When you went through Mach 1... And you knew you were there. You had been close before.
Yeah, well,
and you had experienced
about 0.96 or 96% of the speed of sound,
and had you experienced
heavy buffeting?
Well, that's what I wanted. That's what I recall you telling me. There was heavy buffeting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, the airplane shaking pretty bad, and it was just. And also, we had run out of elevator effectiveness, and we were flying it with the horizontal stabilizer or the flying tail on the airplane, and. That's really one of the big things that came out of the whole program, was finding out that you needed a flying tail to maneuver or control your airplane in the region of the speed of sound or beyond the speed of sound. Yeah. And it was a surprise to us, really.
And when you finally, that day, 45 years ago, went through Mach 1 and you knew you were there, and there wasn't any buffeting, I mean, it had to be a great feeling of exhilaration. You did it.
Yeah, it really... and we made the first sonic boom there at Edwards, and a lot of people didn't realize what it was, really. It's quite an explosion. But, yes, there was acceleration, and we were happy that, I was, that the thing didn't fly apart.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. Tis you must go and I must bye. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. 'Tis I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so.
One of his other favorite people, among the many, was Bo Schembechler, who's on the other end of our line this morning. Bo, JP's helped you, and I know you've helped him, too, and you'll miss him like the rest of us.
But you know, Frank, in thinking about this, I thought about the millions of friends that he had that none of us really know about. I think about my 93-year-old mother down in northeastern Ohio, that when JP got sick, she was just devastated. Because every morning she woke up listening to the radio and listening to JP. And he became, even though she had never met him, he became a very, very close friend. JP said this, JP said that. Isn't he wonderful, you know? And I think that's the amazing thing about him, working at a 50,000-watt station, being the great personality that he was. He had more friends than all of us really know.
Lee Trevino is in town with all the other best senior golfers in the world. Did you play that course yesterday? What'd you think of it?
Yeah, JP, I played it yesterday, and it's a... It's a Jack Nicklaus golf course. Yes, it is. I talked to the gentleman. I had dinner with him at the Big Red down at McConnell's place in Columbus, Ohio, last year. And he's in charge of the properties for Ford. Mm-hmm. And he said, I watched him pretty close. He said, I stayed on him. I made sure he didn't build some kind of a monster. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sure glad he stayed on him because,
you know, we were,
it's tough, man. It's hard.
We were all sitting together down at the Big Reds, down at the golf club, when he told you that, matter of fact. People are saying, look, if Nicklaus is on his game, nobody's going to catch him this week. Yeah, you don't believe that, do you?
No. No, not at all. I'll tell you, this golf course is very difficult, though. I will say this. There's only probably about six guys that can win this tournament. It's not an easy golf course. If the wind blows, JP, it's going to be a very difficult course. It's got a lot of water. The water comes into play. It's got a lot of ravines. Jack never builds a green that faces you. It always faces right to left or left to right.
Yeah.
So the target is very small. We're going to have to go in there a little bit higher because, you know, he's a high ball hitter and mm-hmm. he tends to build golf courses around his particular game. But, it's not an easy course by no means. Now, if the wind doesn't blow, then I don't think the golf course is going to be that difficult. But if the wind blows, yeah, you're going to see some very high scores.
See us continue to be as dominant in our own market as we have been, naturally. That becomes, as you well know, very difficult. You must remember, as recently as when I came back from San Francisco in 1965, that there were really only seven other competitive signals in the Detroit area, seven AM stations. FM really was not a factor at the time. Today, 7 years later, there are 27, and there may be 28 or 29 at the moment, but 27 signals competing for the audience pie. Therefore, there has been a proliferation of audience in every other major market in the country. We haven't really suffered from this yet. I think that frankly is inevitable. Okay.
The free
freeway's leaping. Rev up your heat and join all those horns beeping away. Any cat who can sign an X is picking up his unemployment checks. But who's complaining? What's more, it's raining. Punching in hell. Have a nice day.
Somebody calling in from the car wash. Who's this, please?
Buongiorno, paesani.
Luigi.
Come sta,
paesani. Hey, Luigi, where you been all these years?
Hey, I've been away too far. You come by, don't see you. You're no good friend anymore. What's wrong?
Well, you know, I thought they put you out of business. I'm glad to hear you're back. I'm just kidding.
Very
hey, you know I'm kidding. You know that.
Celebrate 25 years.
Well, this is the last hour of St. Patrick's Day. Sharon McPhail from the prosecutor's office is running for mayor, and she wanted to get her 2 cents in before she left. Sharon's going to do an Irish dance for us, aren't you?
Well, I promised JP I'd come down and teach him how a real Irish person dances.
Are you ready? I'm ready. What kind of music would you like? Some Irish music? We can give you that. Okay, here we go. Right. Here's Blackthorn going. Oh, I'm ready to learn. All right. Okay, what are we doing? Okay. Yeah. Ready? Yeah. I'm ready. This is dancing on radio. It's been done before. Ready? What do you think? You're too good. Thanks, Sharon. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Sharon McPhail. Thank you. I think I got to work. I need a little work, but Sharon was very good. Thanks, Sharon. Governor John Engler is with us, Governor. What do you... Aren't you glad that was me trying to do that dance instead of you?
That's right. I was just heading for the rear when I saw jigs being done up here. I thought, jig is up. I'm getting out of here.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. I know it was a tough ride in, wasn't it?
It was a long ride, slow ride. The lodge is very slow this morning.
Well, you're nice to come, and I hope you're going to... Is this a working day, or is this a fun day?
No, it's a working day. I'll be, except for the break at Holy Trinity at noon, a lot of meetings. David Cole's coming out with a new report today on the auto industry, about a year's worth of work by his office, and got some real interesting information in it for the people of the state.
I know that you signed a proclamation that today is Irish Day. Don't read the whole thing now, but how does it... Just give us the sense of it.
I'm not going to read it at all. I'm just going to give it to you. I wanted you to have one of the original copies for Irish Week for this week, and certainly highlighted by this day, and talks about the contributions of all the Irish.
This is Mike Worf. I was privileged to be a part of this remembrance this morning. We are all better people because J.P. McCarthy touched our lives. To his wife Judy and his children Jamie, Susan, Kathleen, John, Kevin, and Diane, God bless you all.
And this is Frank Beckman. The good Lord has a reason for everything he does on this earth, and someday, in some way, he'll let us know why he chose this time to take our friend, our colleague, J.P. McCarthy. Godspeed, Joseph.
We traditionally close this show with a poem written many, many years ago by Hal Boyle of Associated Press. And we've had people like the late Jerry Cavanaugh and the late Judge Vince Brennan read it. It is to their memory that we always dedicate this program. The poem is, What Is It Like to Be Irish? Well, it is to have an angel in your mouth turning your prose to poetry. It is to have the gift of tongues, to know the language of all living things. Oh, on this day, too, it is music, the deep, deep music of living, the low, sad rhythms of eternity. You see, the Irishman hears the high song of the turning spheres, the dim lullaby of the worm in its cocoon. All the world is in tune, a tune that only he can hear. It is to live the whole history of his race between a dawn and a dawn. And on St. Patrick's Day, to be Irish is to know more glory, adventure, magic, victory, exultation, gratitude, and gladness than any other man can experience in a lifetime. It is to walk in complete mystic understanding with God for 24 wonderful hours. And on this day, on St. Patrick's Day, everyone is Irish who wants to be.